Blackie, quitting is the solution to everything.
Well, it's worked before.
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it has. Now, I'm not listening to nothing, okay? I thought about this college thing a lot. I'll be missing the best 4 years of my life.
Education is not a waste of time.
Well, I already got my education in high school.
Not the way I see it.
Well, then I learned on the streets then.
He got his big break right there on General Hospital way back in the 80s. But he has gone on to become one of Hollywood's most recognizable faces and brands. With a career spanning over 3 decades, we have seen John Stamos do it all, from playing Uncle Jesse to playing with the Beach Boys on stage and everything in between. And it is a thrill to welcome John Stamos right here to Banfield. Well, hello there, you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. What a cool show you have going here. Like, this is just a non-biased news program, right?
Hey, go figure, right? The way it always used to be. We figured it was a good idea. I'm glad you're playing along. That's wonderful. You know what? I wondered if you'd had a chance to have a sleep yet from your unbelievable performance on July 4th with the Beach Boys. There you were, jamming with Beach Boys with a big old crowd. It must have been great.
It's the thrill of my life. I mean, next to my wife and my child, it's the greatest thing. And the first time I played with them, first real time I played big show, was in Washington, D.C. in 1984. And there was a million people on the, you know, it was their big 4th of July, you know, special that they did every year. So to be on stage with the Beach Boys on the 4th of July, it's so, you couldn't get more patriotic unless you shoot, you know, apple pie out of a T-shirt cannon or something. But it was hot that night. That's not me, but
that one isn't, but you're with the gang, and we just had you up on the screen. So I was very curious about how you ended up being, like, a member of the Beach Boys occasionally. Like, you're one of the guys. It's a regular thing. It wasn't a one-off.
Well, I consider myself a obsessed fan that just wouldn't go away after all these years. My best friend in the 80s, and still does, was playing guitar for the Beach Boys, and the Beach Boys were my like, who's your favorite, Ashley? Who did you grow up? You know, what group did you just idolize?
Oh, man, like Nazareth and Deep Purple and all that crazy stuff.
Okay. Well, suppose you got to meet, like, Nazareth or Deep Purple, Smoke on the Water. And to meet them was a thing. So I was about 18 years old, 19. I was in San Diego, and I was on General Hospital. And the show had ended, but they hadn't done the encore yet. And I went back to see my friend backstage, and there was a lot of cheerleaders because they were playing at a baseball stadium. And they were screaming, and they chased me into the back room. And Mike Love looked over to my friend and said, "Who's that?" And my friend said, "That's John Stamos. He's on General Hospital." And Mike Love says, "Does he always have girls chasing him like that?" And my friend said, "Yes." And then Mike said, "Get him on stage." And then I really haven't left since then.
And sometimes you're drumming, and sometimes you're playing the guitar. How do you decide? Is it per song that you particularly like best as a drummer and as a guitarist?
Yeah, sometimes it's like that, but it's mostly, I like to get out in front a little bit, so there's another drummer there, so we switch off. But I don't take this lightly. This is the, you know, it's like an out of body experience. It's a transcendent feeling that I just can't believe that I'm on stage with this band that I love so very much. And the music, let me just talk about that, because this is a time when, boy, do we need music and live music now we get to have. But just the optimism and the positivity of the music, you know, wouldn't it be nice? Fun. The world is, as you know, it's in a little bit of a dark place, and to have the lightness of the Beach Boys, it's heart music, I always say. They don't have to think about it. That's why you see so many kids in the audience. It just bypasses the brain and goes right to the heart, and I'm really grateful to be part of letting that music get back out into the world.
It is really feel-good music. You're right. And I think you hit on something really important there, which helps me to pivot, only because it makes sense. You know, pandemic really had us all locked away and bored and going a little nutty. And we all watched a lot of TV and we listened to a lot of podcasts. And here you are. I did not know, John Stamos, you were entering my world of crime and justice with this podcast, The Grand Scheme, Snatching Sinatra. It is a crime and justice podcast about the kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. So what the heck? Tell me what you're doing in my lane.
So tell me about, how is it your lane? Are you, forgive me, because I know you're new. And
crime and justice, baby. I'm all crime and justice.
Are you?
Yeah, that's what I've been doing for, you know, the last 20 years. All, you know, a lot of crime and justice and law and order.
Well, you'll love this, I think. And the beauty of it is, it's you know, again, talking about how the world is right now, true crime, It has all the twists and turns and all the, you know, crazy characters, but without the blood and the guts and the serial killers, there's nobody gets killed. But, you know, as I say in the thing, nobody quite gets out alive. I mean, I bet you, did you know about the story that Frank Sinatra Jr. was kidnapped in the early 60s?
You know, I did not know until I started reading up about the project that you're doing. And right. I thought, where was I to not know about this? So what happened?
Well, it was sensational for a moment. And then I think, you know, Frank Sr. didn't want anybody talking about it. You know, if he was alive today, God bless him. I love Frank Sinatra, but I think I'd be getting a knock on the door from Vinnie Babangadanzo saying, Stamos, no, no, podcast. But it was this, it's the greatest untold story. And my association with the Beach Boys led me to a friendship with Jan and Dean, who also did surf music and you know, that kind of music at the time. And so Dean Torrance was best friends with Barry Keenan. Barry Keenan was the guy who pulled off the caper. He kidnapped Frank Sinatra Jr. And Dean Torrance loaned him seed money to buy guns and get the thing going. So one day at an Orange County fair where I used to live, I was seeing Jan and Dean, and I was sitting backstage, and Dean said, "Say, Stamos, do you produce anything?" And I said, "Sure, I do." I didn't. And he said, "I got this story. My friend kidnapped Frank Sinatra Jr." I'm like, "What?" And he had the rights, and he said, "Let's go try to do something with this." That was 25 years ago. It sat around, and and Barry and Dean tried to make it, and it never got made. This guy, when you listen to the first episode, you'll see he was in dire straits. He was a good man. He went to school out here with a lot of other celebrities, Ryan O'Neal, and everybody was very successful around him, and he wanted a seat at the big table. He was he had mental illness, and during that time, and this podcast I think will really shed a light on that. During that time, there was no help for it; they would just sweep it under the carpet. But he was on a bluff overlooking Catalina Island, and he said God's voice came over on the radio and told him to kidnap somebody. Couldn't be a girl, couldn't be a baby. But it had to, that's the only way to get your life back on track. He owed a lot of money all over the place, and all he wanted was $240,000 at the time. And by the end of the first episode, maybe you wouldn't do it, but you could see why Barry did it. And then it just unfolds from there. They tried three times. The third time, the second time they tried to do it, it was Kennedy had been shot that day. Now, so the nation's like this. Frank Sinatra's like this with John F. Kennedy being shot. 2 weeks later, he says, "Well, that was in Dallas. I have a schedule to keep. I got to keep going." And he goes up to Tahoe with his friend Joe Amsler, who was a fellow Baron. They had this group in high school, and they kidnap Frank Sinatra Jr. They get him out of Tahoe remarkably because everything was blocked off, and he stores him at a house in the valley here on Winnetka, which the valley is in Los Angeles here. And it's just this crazy story.
So when we come back after the break, I want you to tell me about this connection with Barry Keenan, the kidnapper. You don't often get the criminal just unleash the floodgates of all the details of his crime, but he did that to you. And I can't wait to hear the details. When we come back after the break, a little bit more on that. And then also what you're doing on a show called Big Shot. That's next. Very Beach Boy sounding like music, but we're back with John Stamos, who's doing something very un-Beach Boy like. He's actually telling us about a true crime podcast. So when we went to break, you were telling us about Barry Keenan, who kidnapped Frank Sinatra's son, Frank Sinatra Jr., and it turns out he decided to just tell you everything about his crime. What did he tell you?
Everything. He's 81. He was just here the other day, and it was his birthday. He's a frail old man, but a flawed man, a man who, an imperfect man trying to pull off the perfect crime, I say. The beauty of this podcast, I think, is that you can really see how broken he was and how broken he was at the times too. He was a Catholic, and there was a lot of that going on, and his mother suffered from a mental illness and tried to kill herself a few times. But the story just gets really twisty and windy and crazy. And do you know a lawyer? She was famous for defending sex criminals. Her name was Gladys Towles Root. Have you ever heard of her?
I do not.
She ended up, she was a, defended one of the, there were three guys, Barry and then John and Joe, but she ended up in the courtroom, and she was this flamboyant lawyer that wore these crazy hats and crazy outfits, and like I said, she defended sex crimes, but she was realizing they were losing this case pretty badly. They had all the evidence, and she decided to spin it and whispered it in Barry's ear saying, well, didn't this was Junior did this, right? Frank Sinatra Sr. did this, didn't he? This is a publicity stunt. And they went down that road. Now, that really pissed off the old man. That's when things got pretty dark. But this woman was really, you should check her out. It's a very colorful character.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. As I understand it, the way this thing ended up, you know, playing out was that Barry, you know, used to hang with a lot of really famous people and figured, hey, this might be my ticket to getting some fame. What a dumb idea. But that yeah. also, you know, Frank Sinatra Jr., having been the victim of a kidnapping, ended up really suffering the wrath of public opinion, thinking that, you know, they had orchestrated this for publicity himself. He was part of it, which was not true.
Right, 100%, you're right. And that's when he, you know, that's when he started talking a little bit in the 90s. He did some interviews. And then he really hasn't told his full story from beginning to end until now. And like you said, like, when do you get the actual criminal to tell it? He, you know, he's a good guy. He reformed himself. He helped out a lot of, he's a big AA guy. He helped people with substance abuse and prison reform. But he's a colorful character, an incredible memory, remembers everything. We had to, you know, double check everything. You know, in a blink of an eye, here he is. He pulls this, you know, God tells him to do something. He does it. And he's got the FBI, the CIA, J. Edgar Hoover, Sam Giancana from the Mafia. Sam Giancana called Sinatra and said, you want me to take care of this our way, Frank? And, you know, Kennedy. The whole world wanted to get this guy, and he's skiing in Tahoe, going down the bunny slopes with his girlfriend because he forgot the gun and left fingerprints up in Lake Tahoe. It's a wacky story, but it's also very deep and interesting.
I love that you're doing that, and I love the fact that you've got the show Big Shot, which is streaming on Disney Plus. And you know, it's not lost on anybody watching this right now that you were such a big deal on Full House, and then Fuller House. I wonder, because Full House was such a, you know, classic during the Cosby show, that era. You know, here's Cosby now coming back into our zeitgeist, and yeah. everything that's happening with that, you know, with him now potentially getting money from the state of Pennsylvania and saying, I'm going to get back on the road. You know, for people like you, it must be really hard to reconcile, like, talent back then that we all loved and is nostalgia, and then the person who it is now. I'd love to get you to weigh in on that.
Well, I mean, I don't feel comfortable weighing in on Bill Cosby, other than I just feel awful for his victims. And, you probably, you know better. I mean, how does our legal system work? How does that happen? What happened there?
You know, some people complain that it's a technicality, and then others say, how dare you call the Constitution a technicality? It's simple. I mean, there were legal processes that played out that the Supreme Court determined just weren't in lockstep with the Constitution. So as unfortunate as it is the reality. It is our protections, and he benefited from it regardless. And, you know, now he's saying, and in your eye, right, give me the money for having been incarcerated for 2 years, and I'm going back out on the road.
Well, I hope people don't hire him. I saw that somebody in New York, I think it was the seller, saying, we don't want him here. And I'll bet he's going to have a lot harder time than he thinks. You know, him and OJ can go do The Odd Couple at dinner theater or something, but I'm not going to see him.
So let's pivot to something lighter. We do this thing on the show. It's called Table for Two, and it gives me a lot of insight into our guests. We seat you at a table with a chair across from you that's empty, and we ask you if you could put anyone in that chair, living or dead, and spend an evening either having a glass of wine or a meal, who would you choose, John Stamos?
Well, let me say that picture, very specifically, that was given to me by Frank Sinatra's right-hand man, who was with Tony O, who was with him for many, many years. That is Frank's handkerchief there, that red a polka dot handkerchief there. So I think at this time, I usually say Walt Disney, but at this time I think Sinatra would be great to have dinner with. He would probably, if the pasta was al dente, he'd throw it up against the wall, but I would duck because I know that that's what Frank does. I got to meet him once. I loved that era. I just loved it. Sammy Davis Jr. was on General Hospital when I was on there, and he helped me play music on television. And I met Frank. My dad loved Frank Sinatra. I took him to a concert, and I asked the publicist, I said, can we meet Frank Sinatra? And they said, if Frank wants to meet you, you'll know. What does that mean? And Rickles was opening up, and Rickles became a very close, almost like a father figure to me over the years, too. And at the end, Don introduced the people in the crowd. There's Tony Danza's here and John Stamos. And I was sort of embarrassed to stand up. And he said, he's probably in the cheap seats in the grass. In fact, he's probably smoking grass. And Sinatra grabbed the mic from Rickles and said, smoke one for me, Johnny. And I was like, oh, I can die. You see that, Dad? It's cool.
Oh, well, listen, I'm wishing you all the luck on your podcast. By the way, just looking at your CV, it's crazy. You've been on the most innovative programs in the history of television, ER, Entourage, Two and a Half Men, Law and Order, Special Victims Unit. And that's just the, you know, after the big ones, Full House, Fuller House. And now here you are with the Big Shot and the Grand Scheme, Snatching Sinatra, the podcast. John Stamos, a delight to talk with you. I hope we get to do this again.
I do, too. And thank you. Good luck with this, because the format that you talk about is really needed on television right now and on the world, because I got a kid who's 3 years old and I want him to be able to watch something that where he can make his own decisions, but just watch for the truth. And I think that's what you're about. And I'm very grateful to be on here today.
We like the idea of unbiased news on News Nation, too. Thank you, John Stamos.
Thank you, Ashley.